summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. For this week's episode in our Summer Listens series, we picked the very first piece I reported for On the Media. On Thanksgiving Day of 2000, I hung out with Mark Stamey as he reported the day's mayhem in the city for the New York Post. Prepare for the historic Summer Listen number 3. There are five-star generals of newspaper journalism. Big book writers like Bob Woodward and star columnists with postage stamp pictures like Jimmy Breslin. And then there are the infantrymen, grunts who pound the pavement on dreary stories for undistinguished papers, like Mark Stamey of the New York Post. Stamey is short and square-faced, a middle-aged man from a broken home in Syracuse, New York. He ran his own business for a while, salvage diving. Then he went to college, earning master's degrees in sociology and journalism. He was already 45 by the time he became a reporter, freelancing first for the New York Times before landing the job at the New York Post. At the Post, he's covered fires, injured horses, fires, homicides, West Nile virus, evictions, and fires. Stamey was working the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade the day I spent with him. He pulled a sour face as Mickey Mouse, four stories high and six stories long, floated down Broadway.
I mean, that's it. The guy owns town here. Mickey Mouse took over 42nd Street. That's more than any gangster could ever do.
Stamey is cooling his heels at the parade, interviewing kids until something bigger happens. It does, and he's summoned back to the office a short walk away. As a foot soldier, he rarely writes a story by himself. In fact, he rarely writes a story. His job is to cover the story, go to the scene while another reporter is dispatched, say, to the press conference, and phone the facts, the quotes, and the color he gathers. He nurses a healthy resentment for his white-collar bosses back at the desk.
It's all right if I live in this world, but they don't want to even be brought, you know, aware of it. When I say you see, like, a dog licking human blood from the cracks of a sidewalk, I'm not inventing it. I mean, this is, we wait, well, sometimes we end up walking in gore and not knowing it.
Why do you do it?
I need the job. I think I would rather not do it. I mean, I need the money. I need the job. I need the...
You need this job.
I need
at the New York Post covering babies going out of windows.
No, I don't need that. Nobody wants it. No, I don't have any joy in that. None whatsoever. I've been told on occasion I'm too stupid to write my own stories. And then the only thing I'm good for is driving the car. So they got me kind of pigeonholed as a roughneck street guy. And I don't belong inside. Let's see what delights they have for us now.
Now at the Post, Stamey is sent on another story by city editor John Mancini.
This could be a little heart warmer.
I can't wait.
Fred Nunez is 16 years old, but just barely. Because he had a puffy jacket on, maybe not unlike yours. And somebody tried to, somebody did stab him for it, but they didn't get his jacket. Stabbed three times. He's in serious condition at Jamaica Hospital. Why don't you check, make sure he's still in the hospital. We're pretty sure he is, and then go see him. Maybe the family brought a turkey over and a nice new jacket for him or something.
Some bandages.
Yeah, so this could be...
Stamey climbs into his Jeep for the ride down to East New York. It's familiar territory to Stamey, the rundown districts on the city's fringes.
I spend a lot of time in a lot of these other, you know, outer boroughs.
And are you saying there's, like, there's no glamour, there's no romance, there's no sense of living your own drama in doing this kind of work?
You mean like, you know, the camera swooping around while the theme song plays in the background and here you are being grand?
Yeah.
No. No, it's all like emptying the trash cans and changing the bedpans and... No, there's no glamour in this. I can't imagine. I wouldn't be able to fantasize it being glamorous.
We arrive at the apartment house of Fred Nunez and park by a garbage pile. The building isn't locked, so we walk right in.
They're at the hospital.
They're at the hospital. That's what I thought. I think I'll go there instead. Yeah. Do you know Fred?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Does anybody else here know him? He's a, maybe talk to somebody who knows him? The neighbors?
1D.
1D? Downstairs? Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving.
He was like our cousin.
Yeah? Yeah, I heard he's a nice guy. I heard he just got up for his coat. Yeah, that's not good. We're here to help if we can.
After the interviews and a quick trip to the hospital, he phones in from an emergency room payphone to dump the quotes his editors will assemble into a story.
Yes, I do. I'm at the hospital now. We were just told that we cannot go talk to the family. But this kid's under heavy security because the perpetrators are still, apparently, they're on the loose. But I went over to his building where he lived, and I spoke to people who knew, everybody knew him. Everybody had the same thing to say about this kid, uniformly very positive. So one of the mothers in the neighborhood that knew him well, her name is Juliet, J-U-L-I-E-T-T-E, Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R, said, comma, quote, he got along with everybody, dash, all the kids like him, and I like him. It's such a tragedy for a coat. I'm afraid for my own son. He has a name brand coat too, period, close quote. Good enough. All right, we got it then? Thank you, Andy. Is Mancini still there? Who is he, the one that tells me good night? Happy Thanksgiving, Andy. Bye-bye.
Having been good-nighted by his editors, he's free to go. So we take off. There's a diner off the highway on the way from Jamaica Hospital in Queens, not far from where Stamey used to live. They all know him there. I want to play the little jukebox mounted in our booth, but he doesn't. Stamey says he finds it hard to relax. He doesn't have a close-knit family or a sheltering circle of friends. In fact, and he's pretty embarrassed by this, the only regular engagements he attends are Friday night Mensa meetings.
When you're covering your sixth fire in as many weeks, do you ever think to yourself, does the public really need to know about this fire? I mean...
Yeah, but then again, there's always that. Yesterday, I covered a fatal fire of an NYU student who fell asleep using aromatherapy candles. You know, if you don't know about that, you think, what a benign little thing. Would be healthy, asleep all night, have a nice glowing light there. Wake up and the whole family's dead. Seen this a lot.
But it's the other stuff. It's the catalog of miseries. You know, does that serve a social function, a positive?
Yeah. It's not just voyeurism, and it's not just intrusion so much as it is there's a need, and we can tell people about it, and then they feel it. More times than not, people have come forward to help. Especially if it's someone who's been killed, you say, what can you do? He's dead. And say, well, you want him to be forgotten? You know, just another toe tag.
You know, when I looked at your clips, fire after murder after...
train wreck after plane crash after defenestration after infanticide, parasite, homicide. I mean, come on. Whatever.
I thought, how can a person like that actually like their job? But you don't like your job.
I like it and I don't like it. The thing I like about my job is that it's infinitely challenging. It's a total 100% IQ test 100% of the time. Outwit all of New York City and get the story in the paper. What I hate is empathizing with the people whose children have been hurt. I mean, when people are just so stricken with grief that they can't talk and they can't cry, they make this sound, they call it the cri du chat, the cry of the cat. It's like a non-verbal, internalized, anguished wail that freezes in their vocal cords. And that stays with you. It, like, stains you, you know?
Back on the road, Stamey says the urban spectacles he serves up daily have earned him a twitch and many sleepless nights.
Yeah, I never want to be on that side of the story, but I live in constant fear that it's going to happen. I'm going to get shot. I think myself I'm going to get shot. I think anything can happen to anybody at any time, but we go out looking for it.
He fantasizes about moving to Florida or Tahiti, but that's not going to happen.
I wish there was a 12-step program for journalism, because it's very much like an addiction. It's an addiction because it pulls you in, it beguiles you, it hooks you, and then it starts turning you inside out. And the rush is gone, and all that's left is the hangover. The hangover and the tedium, and you're just doing it like a zombie because that's what you do every day, that's what you did every day, and it's not going to change.
The next day, he was back on the beat, back on another story, and it ran under another shared byline. The headline read, Queen's Inferno Leaves Boy, 6, Gravely Injured. This piece first aired in January 2001. Mark Stamey still lives in New York City, retired now. Hi, Mark. To find out about OTM extras like this Summer Listens series, sign up for our newsletter at onthemedia.org/newsletter. Thanks.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.